The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners, Craig Konstantinovich and Cole Hammack. And today we're breaking down retirement statements, what they really mean and why they matter. So if you've ever received your retirement statements in the mail like I have, and you sit and you think, I'm gonna open this up and give it a good look.
I respect it.
Well, I was going to say, first and foremost, why are you still getting it sent to you in the mail? Tracy, well, this is 2025, electronics.
Some of them are electronic and some come via mail. And the ones that come through the mail, I always get excited.
At Christmas.
Because I want to see what it looks like.
And then you
and
get
then
disappointed.
I open it and I go,
what am I looking
okay,
at?
Okay, there's the balance, and the rest of it is like reading, you know, a foreign
it's
language.
Greek, yeah.
So
totally get it.
I'm looking forward to this conversation from the every person perspective.
This will be a fun one.
Understanding your retirement statements, a guide to clarity and confidence. So hopefully we can answer some questions of our followers. Breaking down your retirement statements. So Have you ever taken a moment to kind of review your contribution percentages lately? I mean, it's you can't find it. You can't understand it unless you have a trained eye. And are you confident that you're maximizing your contributions without sacrificing cash flow? So how do you tell somebody if they're putting enough into their retirement account? And where do they – I guess, do we want to start by kind of talking about – the similarities to all these accounts, because every account statement, thank you, looks different. I know I've been gone for a while, so it's hard for me to speak. we could line up 12 or 13 of them from different companies and different types of accounts.
Yeah.
And, you know, the disclosures are in different places and the phone number, the contact information and the type of investments that you have, some ticker symbols and stuff like that. So where do you start? On a fundamental level, and then we'll get into some high-level questions.
I mean, not to oversimplify things here, but start at the top and you kind of work your way down.
I was hoping so badly you would say that.
Sarcasm already.
Well, but no, in all seriousness, I mean, there's different things that you're going to be looking for.
I wasn't thinking you go to the back page first.
Well, I would certainly hope not, but you never know. Just, again, throwing it out there. But, no, you start from the top because any number of things can change, whether it be the name of the company, whether it be who the custodian is or who's actually sending you the statements. Sometimes, depending on if it's an old 401k plan for an employer that you worked for many moons ago all the way up until today, you may not be getting or you may not have all of your contact information updated to get all of the pertinent updates when they're happening. So sometimes getting a statement, getting something in the mail, that's your first identification of, hey, there's been a change. So going from Fidelity to Transamerica or American Funds to Vanguard, there's any number of custodians that are out there, but it all comes down to, well, if we change custodians, that normally means there's a change in investment options, which means there may be changes in fees, which may mean there's changes in contributions that may or may not be applicable.
Wait a minute. So if you are allocated 60-40, and you've got a pretty hearty savings, and you decide to roll this over or change companies that you're working with, you're telling me that the 60-40 isn't the benchmark from one company to the next, that's the strategist that you change to will actually revamp and overhaul the whole thing?
So you just indicated that you had say-so. You can change your investment allocation at any given point in time, but employers could change who's going to actually custody or hold the money. So if I'm just picking names out there from common companies that are out there, but if you go from Fidelity to T. Rowe Price, again, just as the example, Well, at Fidelity, maybe you had your mix of investments to get you into your 60-40 allocation. Those same investment options may not be available at T. Rowe Price. They may have some that are similar, but it may not be the exact ones. So since you didn't initiate the change, since you didn't prompt a rollover or consolidating accounts, it was the employer that picked it, they will, more times than not, they will put the most consistent investment. So if you were in five different mutual funds, they're going to try their best to match you up with the new same five mutual funds that are equivalent for the most part, but they may not have those mutual funds that are available. And if that's the case, you may be put into either a target date fund or an investment that's, hey, based off of your age and how likely you are to reaching age 65 or your retirement, here's the investment option that we're putting you into. Or they may say, hey, we have it in our rules that if you don't have an investment allocation, you're just going to a cash or a cash equivalent fund. So that's where, again, as you start off, the very first thing that you want to look at truly is this a company? Is this a statement that I've seen before? If it's new, then obviously you want to more immediately continue to page down and see what else is new.
Does every statement show ticker symbols?
Not necessarily. So like IRAs, for example, those oftentimes will because you're handpicking those. Mm-hmm. 401ks, 403bs, they can sometimes have proprietary funds basically wrapped up in there where there may not necessarily be a ticker tied to it. There may be a comparable fund out there, but they're a little bit harder to do research on, just in the sense that you can't type in four or five letters into Google to see exactly what's happening.
Like one of the biggest ones for those proprietary funds, if you look at the Thrift Savings Plan or one of the largest government plans out there, they have what's called a C fund, which stands for Common Stock Fund. Mm-hmm. That's, in a lot of instances, very similar to an S&P 500 index fund. So they're not going to call them the same, but they're going to essentially be like-kind investments.
Wow, I didn't realize. So I always assumed it was all going into the S&P.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
And options, yeah.
So how does somebody know what they're putting in as they're looking at their statements, and maybe this is an employer statement, a 401k, how do they know what they're putting in?
Well, again, it comes back to, are you presently employed or not? Mm-hmm. If you aren't presently employed and you see contributions going in, something else is going on there. That's not supposed to happen. But if you are actively employed, usually near the top, there's either an account, an activity summary. Some may list your contribution percentage. They will show you specifically, more times than not, what you're putting in. Now, your employer contributions, they may break those down as far as numbers, if that's actually happening. So they may put a dollar amount there, but more times than not, they don't put any kind of percentage. They don't give a lot of other indicators. It's more so, what are you putting into this account? That's usually right under, you know, your name at the top, who the custodian is, what the plan is, and then, hey, here's where you're invested or how much you're investing.
And just to ask maybe to clarify too, Tracy, are you referencing just like the money going in kind of at that level, mm-hmm. or a little bit deeper in terms of how that money is being invested?
I think it's relevant to talk about both, honestly.
Okay. Because the how it's being invested can be a little bit more difficult, I think, as the layperson, in the sense that you do, if you're just sitting there looking at a statement, it is difficult to understand what funds you have available, how are these invested, mm-hmm. how much you should put into each one if take advantage of any of them. So that part can be very difficult. And I don't know if there's really a perfect solution outside of, sure, you can Google some things, look for historical information, but obviously historical performance is not indicative of future performance, mm-hmm. right? So it is very difficult to pick the perfect options as just one person. Where I think a lot of people kind of maybe default more toward a target date fund to keep things simple, because mm-hmm. it just tracks based on age, but there's not really a perfect solution.
If you've got a company account or a company plan, let's say 401k, mm-hmm. is everybody invested the same way in the same, do they have the same options unless they're individually choosing for themselves? Is the company basically you know, wash, rinse, repeat for all the employees?
Yeah, there's rules and regulations around 401ks and what options can be presented. You can't necessarily favor, say, the C-suite people and give them a different kind of investment option than you can, you know, the new hire that just comes in. They have to be uniform investment options. Now, more companies than not are starting to include an option where you could go to a third party, pick your own investments from your own choices, but just kind of as a blanket whole, more times than not, you may have 20 funds that are within the account. And as long as you are a plan participant within that account, doesn't matter if it's your first year, if it's your 20th year, if it's your 50th year of working there, you're going to have those same 20 investment options that you can pick from. Now, Tracy, you may pick 5 of the funds. I may pick 20 of the funds. Cole may pick 10 of them. And we may have all different percentages in each one of those funds. That's fine. But whatever funds are available, you have the same options, that I have the same options, that he has the same options.
And all this is based on risk tolerance, right?
So the investment options are selected by the employer or the person that creates the plan themselves. This is not selected by the individual investor or anything like that.
And that's why it's different.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Does your retirement statement reflect, let's say your IRA, we'll talk about IRA, individual accounts. Does your IRA statement or your other retirement statements reflect the level of risk that you've instated at that stage in your career?
Some do. So I guess some can. So some will, I think Vanguard will do this. They'll show what is your risk tolerance based on how your investments are relative to what the risk tolerance maybe should be based on your age group.
Mm-hmm.
So that part's pretty unique. But oftentimes it might just be, hey, this is the percent that's very aggressive. This is the percent that's just aggressive, moderate, conservative kind of thing. So it'll show general like trend lines in terms of how you're allocated, but they may not compare that against a group.
The reason I ask is, let's say you're with a company for 25 years or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rarity these days. But does your risk tolerance change, I assume, with age? I mean, you're obviously, when you're younger, you have more playtime, right?
Yeah.
Between now and retirement. Do you have to, is it up to you to reassess that, or does the company reassess that for you?
Yeah, so that'll come down to how you're invested. So if you're picking your own funds, that is 100% on you to determine when you feel as though you shouldn't be so aggressive. So you have to make that call. If you are invested in more of that target date fund like we talked about, that's just a natural occurrence. As you get closer to that date, it's going to get more conservative.
And you have to be careful too, because as you get further and further along, you know, let's say we have a target date 2025 fund. So, hey, this year you're supposed to retire. Everything's supposed to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of those funds will go, and after year 2025, they'll convert to retirement income. And as we've talked about, as we have seen, oftentimes the biggest mistake that retirees make is that they aren't exposed to the stock market at all. And so in those instances, if you're unaware, if you're not keeping close tabs on it, and you transition to that, you may be in a bond or a guaranteed interest payout, but that may not be enough to get you all the way through your retirement. So you always got to be mindful of that and take a look at what is the trajectory of this fund and then what happens after the target date.
Yeah, that's a great point.
A high income earner, and so let's just, I'm going to be very direct. If you're a high income earner, are you automatically in a certain, like a 60-40 or a 70-30, or is that literally individual based?
Yeah, so oftentimes what happens, you sign up for a retirement plan, they're going to park you in that target date fund. So unless you make a selection, they're going to say, okay, when are you 65? What's the closest appropriate target date fund?
So it's based on age?
Yes, okay. Yeah. But there have been times, and this happens, I think, more so with like smaller employers, where if you sign up for the retirement plan and you don't actively make a decision for how you should be invested, you may even be sitting in cash, which I think Craig referenced earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst thing you can do. So you definitely want to pay attention to that. Make sure you're being proactive on the outset so that way we're not just having something sit there for however many years.
So if you want a sophisticated investment strategy and something that evolves with elevated retirement objectives as a high income earner, how do you know if your decision to be in that percentage or that income is going to be the right fit for you, the 60-40, the 70-30.
Income,
is that where the professional comes in?
Income shouldn't necessarily sway that. Okay. It's going to be more so mm-hmm. the saving strategy that's going to accompany the income. Okay. Where do you park money outside of the 401k? Because that's the other piece. You know, we're throwing out all these different retirement accounts here, 401ks, 403bs. If you are younger than age 50 and you're an active participant, the maximum that you can put into your traditional or your Roth is $23,500. No ifs, ands, buts about it. If you're between ages 50 and 59, the maximum that you can contribute now goes up by another $7,500 for this year. So now you can put in $31,000. Between 60 and 63, they even now have a super catch-up, as they're calling it. So you can put in another roughly, I think it's $3,750 or something like that.
I was hoping you would take this one.
Because it's $11,250 on top of your $23,500. So yeah, whatever that math works out to be at that point. So regardless, most plans have those caps that are on them. There's other limits. There's other things that are happening there. There's employer matches that can come into play. And you're still okay. But I'm just saying, Tracy, you as the individual right now, since we're younger than 50, we can only put in $23,500. Mm-hmm. That's the same across the board. So if you have high income, it's more so, okay, well, I've maxed out my 401k. Where do I put money next? That's where the planner, that's where the savings or investment strategy comes into play, because I've maxed out one bucket. Now where's the next bucket I can start to put money into?
Okay. Question everybody's on the other side is saying they want to hear about is fees. Where do you find your fees when you're looking at your statement? And I've done this here back in the day when I was kind of assimilating to the industry and what we do. I used to scan documents, and like I said before, you could put 10, 15 documents, different kinds of account statements in front of me and ask me a question to find data, and I would literally have to comb through to find it. They bury it. So how do you, and even my statements now, I don't know that I could find the fees that I'm paying the company. So where do you start to find that?
Yeah, sometimes you can't. Sometimes you can't.
Are they not in the
statement. Not always. Yeah. Some companies, they do, you might be able to find them in like the transactions Craig referenced earlier. So when you're seeing some of the movement with the stocks or contributions throughout that period of time, whether it's for the quarter or for the month, there may be something in there that says administrative fee. So just keep an eye out for the keyword fee, or do a command F or control F on your computer for fee. That might be able to point you in the right direction if you're looking at the statement electronically. Sometimes they're in like a smaller breakdown. I'm picturing like a Fidelity form in my head, for example. It'll show very clearly what the fee is for that particular breakdown. So some are a lot better than others. But they're not everywhere, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to that point, not every fee is going to be consistent. Usually, right. When it comes to 401k statements, you get those quarterly. So you'll get January through March and April. Well, depending on the consistency or the payment of the fees, that first quarter, there may not be any fee payments. Now, you may catch it on the second quarter, on the fourth quarter, maybe even on the third quarter, but they're not always going to be consistent fees. So you do have to, unfortunately, kind of hunt and peck. Some companies are getting a little bit better about more so just advertising, hey, here's the fees that mm-hmm. you are paying. But the other piece to remember, too, is that usually what is listed on the statements is more so the fees that you are paying. The company may have additional fees that they're paying in the background, but this is just merely for what you're paying as a participant within this plan. So always be mindful of that too, is, you know, hey, there may be some other things that are happening here, which is where more times than not, like I said, if you do have an old employer 401k plan, talk to a professional, talk to someone to get the right idea, but you probably do want to start to consolidate those things because there may be other fees that are out there that you're not aware of.
Well, I think you just answered my question. But so what are those fees? My question was, what do the fees mean exactly? Mm-hmm. Is that your service? Is that, and it sounds like it's literally for them to take your money and move it in different directions, and that's it.
It can be. But again, there's different fees. So Cole mentioned the admin fee. Mm-hmm. That may just be, hey, we're sending you your quarterly statement via mail. Hey, that's $50 a year, let's say. That may be an admin fee that's clearly listed. There may be an investment advisor that's on file. if you are set up in a predetermined risk allocation based off of that advisor and a questionnaire you completed, there may be an additional fee that's on there. So that may start to creep in.
And then an asset-based fee.
Yeah, exactly.
So for certain tiers of balances within the account, they may charge a certain percentage. And then there's mutual fund fees.
Yep.
Wow. So it actually be invested in a particular mutual fund, and some are less expensive than others. But it's all going to be plan-based what options are available to you.
Explain how to know if the fees on the statement are reasonable for a big portfolio and when somebody should explore more cost-effective options.
Best option or best answer? It's our favorite. It depends. I mean, again, you always have to look at, yes, fees are something that you need to be mindful of. You know, what's fair, what's reasonable. I mean, again, I don't think anything would ever be this egregious, but, you know, if you're paying a tenth of the account value every given year just for it to be managed, well, that may not necessarily be the best place for you to be at. I don't think they've ever been that high, though. But as you look at it, you really have to assess, okay, do I get the value out of this that I'm paying for? If I have an investment advisor and I'm paying an advisory fee, do I feel like I can call this person with questions? Do they reach out to me proactively if they're going to be making changes? Do they help educate me on why they're making these changes? The average person may say, well, I don't want to hear from my advisor. I just want them to do what they do. They know better than I. But if you're one of those people that opens up your statements and you say, oh my gosh, my account value is down 10%, you always got to take that with a grain of salt too to know what that real return number is. But hey, if I'm down 10%, how did I end up down 10%? What do I need to do to maybe make that money back?
It's like you're reading my mind.
Well, you know, I do like to think I'm in tune.
I mean, the next thing I wanted to ask that's on my list is, you know, tracking progress towards retirement goals. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at your statements, especially business owners, you know, people who might have lots of things in different places, how do you check to see if you're saving enough for retirement? How do you know if you're right on the track, you know, right on track? And I want to talk about designing the track itself to achieving a desired retirement lifestyle and considering long-term projects and financial complexities.
Are we allowed to say work with a professional? Because some retirement plans, they do. Like, they'll have options where you can plug in your various assets, your accounts, and they'll say based on everything that you have and expectations for Social Security, this is your expected retirement income. But a lot of that's just hypotheticals and you trying your best to plug in based on how you understand things. But there's so much nuance, just like what we're talking about here, that if we're just putting everything in at face value, there's a lot that could be missed doing that. So it's kind of a cop-out answer, but I think you really do need a professional to make sure that where you're tracking and what you're hoping to gauge is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. The more you have, the more you have to protect.
Amen to that. That's very well said.
Mm-hmm. What about coordination with business finances? So for business owners, how well do your personal retirement savings integrate with your business exit strategy or succession planning?
I mean,
I know this is not in your statement, but certainly relevant when we're talking about reading statements and understanding what you have.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest question when it comes to any business owner is more times than not, unless you're, you know, a big large company and, you know, you're publicly listed or something like that, you have to have a valuation completed, which ultimately means just like buying or selling a house, you got to find someone that's willing to pay what you think your asset is worth, what your business is worth. So if you're, you know, trying to coordinate, hey, again, making up numbers, but if I think I've got $1 million business and I've got $1 million saved up in my personal accounts, is $2 million enough to get me where I want to go to do the things that I want to do for the next 10, 20, 30 years? Mm-hmm. That's what the question really comes down to. So how does it all work or how does it all come together? The first thing that you have to do is hopefully plan and plan ahead plenty in advance. You know, I always joke with people that tell me they're thinking about starting a business, and I say, okay, well, what's your exit strategy? I try to get that in their head from the very beginning because it can be so many different things.
Wow, right from the onset.
Right from the beginning, because it's going to create a different plan, a different strategy regardless. Maybe it's creating your own business retirement plan so you can save more. Maybe that's not necessary because you're going to be a mom-and-pop shop, or it's just going to be you and your spouse or something. But really, it all comes down to kind of coordinating everything. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times business owners, they overvalue based off of the sweat equity that they've put in. They overvalue what their business is truly worth. So that's the other thing is when someone else comes in and you think it's, should be a $10 million company, but it's only $1 million. Not only are you, you know, somewhat jaded, but you're also offended. Hey, I've put my, you know, 30 years of working life into this. Now my number is vastly less than what I thought it was. That may change things. So never rely just on a business sale to be kind of your, not get rich quick, but having that be your retirement plan, because you could be sorely mistaken.
Mm-hmm. So as we kind of round out, I want to talk about the pros of understanding and reviewing retirement statements. And we know we've talked about clarity on your financial progress, but how do you spot errors? How do you spot errors? I mean, I know it's easy to do with a 401k because you know what your contribution percentage is, and you know, generally you know what the company's is as well. And if you don't, you should. But in other statements, how do you know that there are errors? How do you tell?
Yeah, I think that the best thing really just comes back to looking at the transaction section. So what actually happened from the last statement to this statement? Because a lot of times it's not so much do you see something, but is something missing? So it happens a lot, maybe less so with massive corporations, but with smaller companies, there may be instances where a contribution maybe didn't go through. Or I've seen this a few times where a client's contributing to their 401k, we get to the end of the year, we don't adjust the amount that we're contributing, they go over the cap. Usually for larger corporations, those get shut off. Once it's 23.5 or last year 23,000 plus catch up, whatever, that'll stop. But smaller companies, they might not have that set up. So we go over that contribution limit, and then we have to deal with the headache of backing out those contributions. So just be aware of what's actually happening. Are we putting into it what we're expecting to? And is everything that should be happening, so with those contributions, actually happening statement to statement?
That starts with your pay stub, though.
Yeah, that'd be a great place to start.
Can you assume that if it goes from your pay stub, that it's generally been...
So should, absolutely, but there are some instances where it may just not be remitted yet to the custodian. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that takes time, or sometimes it falls through the crack, whatever may happen. So I would definitely check both, for sure.
Talking about optimizing employer benefits, I think we kind of went into that, but staying aligned with your goals and updating key information, what kind of information would you update on your statement that would be visible?
Your name.
Address.
Address, absolutely.
Spelling correct, you know, make sure it's spelled correctly. Or
I mean, in all seriousness, like there's been multiple times where someone's come in and, oh, yeah, I had this job 20 years ago and here's my statement and there's a maiden name that's mm-hmm. on there. There's an address from three moves ago. So again, I'm being truthful here. Like, yes, start with the basics. Start with that absolute, just bare bones minimum. Is my name correct? Is my address correct? Is my contact or my email the right email? Is my phone number the right phone number? Like, start there. And then from there, the other thing, probably the most important, is your beneficiary designations.
Glad you called that one. Agreed.
Well, that's if you're fortunate enough to have that clearly listed on the statement, because again, more times than not, it's not on there. And then you may even have an instance where, for whatever reason, you may have updated that with your company, but it didn't translate or come through to the 401k provider.
And that happens a lot, too, if there's a change in provider.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, it may say no beneficiary information on file. Well, really there is, but the statement's not providing it. So that's where, again, I know we're talking about very simplistic things here that aren't, you know, rates of return or numbers or contributions or investments, but just focus on the basic things, because more times than not, that's where we can get in the most trouble if those are out of date.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And if you have trouble, you can give us a call and have a complimentary consultation with one of our CFPs who would be willing to sit down and run through some of these things and answer your questions. That's it for today. We appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget to share with your friends, and we'll catch you on the next topic. Thanks, guys.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.